All right, Jen Cooper, the keeper here for the next episode of the Mix Zone Women's Soccer Podcast. This is episode number 91, and that's a very easy one to find a number for. Of course, the first Women's World Cup was held in November 1991 in China. Who won? The U.S. Women's National Team, of course. Who got the golden boot? Michelle Akers with 10 goals. And who got the golden ball? None other than Karen Jennings, now known as Karen Gabara. She's currently head coach at the U.S. Naval Academy and wife of Washington Spirit head coach Jim Gabara. So as we approach the start of the NWSL's fourth season, I'm going to chat with someone who follows or officially covers each 2015 NWSL club to talk about their off-season changes, new player acquisitions, and hopes for the 2016 NWSL season. First club up for discussion, the 2015 NWSL champions, FC Kansas City. I had a great conversation with Soccer Wire contributor and hardcore KC fan Mark Sean about the team. Second chat on today's episode is a nostalgic one. The Baylor women's team played the Houston Dash last weekend, and since Paul Jobson, the current Baylor head coach, was once part of the Atlanta Beat in the WSA, I could not resist the opportunity to talk women's soccer with him. Paul's wife, Marcy Miller Jobson, played for the Beat and was also a member of the 2007 Women's World Cup team for the U.S. Marcy took over the Baylor program in 2008. The two of them served as head coaches together in 2013 and 2014, and now Paul serves as head coach alone. Apologies for the audio conditions of this one. The wind picked up, and you'll also hear the clamoring of fans trying to get Carly Lloyd's autograph at one point. Jen Cooper, the keeper, here with Mark Sean, the biggest FC Kansas City fan I know, and I mean that in a really good way. Mark, the first thing I want to ask you is, how did you end up following FC Kansas City as passionately as you do when, you know, you don't live anywhere near that part of the country?
Right. Well, in fairness, I don't live that close to many of the teams, except, I suppose, Sky Blue, although... Given where I live in... Well, it's closer, certainly, but I guess I had gotten into the mentality, parochial though it may be, of someone from New York City who doesn't think of central New Jersey as that close. but to answer your actual question, a lot of it was down to the allocation, to the initial allocation, because I looked at the league and none of the teams were that close to me, and I said, okay, who do I really like? And I have always been a big fan of Becky Sauerbrunn and Lauren Holiday, and that was sort of where I started, and then the team just plays great soccer, and things kind of went from there. And I should give at this point a shout out to the supporters group, the Blue Crew, who have, I guess, sucked me even further in than I might have gone on my own. But that's sort of where it started, and I think at this point it's long since taken on a life of its own.
And you've been able to make it out there for multiple FC Kansas City home games, right?
I have. In both of the last two seasons, I've gone to games and hung out with the Blue Crew and so on, which has been great. And I've tried, this past season, I've tried to go to more Sky Blue games, particularly when Kansas City is in town.
Right. Well, and that's a whole other topic, I mean, for a podcast, of just the travel that WOSO fans do, you know, what you're willing to do for the team that you love, or multiple teams. I mean, the team that I followed in WSA was the Bay Area Cyber Rays because my sister lived there. So I was like, okay, I can go out and visit her and see those games. And I remember the very first game that I went to, which was probably only the second game in their franchise history, they had people, as you're walking up, kind of like surveying the crowd and asking basic questions to, you know, they're trying to figure out who's coming to the game. And the first question was, how far have you traveled for this match today? And I said, 1,700 miles. Yes.
That was kind of fun to say. But anyway, let's get back to FC Kansas City. I like that you mentioned their original allocations, Lauren Holiday, Becky Sauerbrunn, and Nicole Barnhart back when she was an allocated player. Now, Lauren Holiday's retired, and I know that's still tough for me to mention directly to you. Becky Sauerbrunn, thankfully not retired, nowhere near it. Nicole Barnhart, still playing like a mad woman, no longer allocated, but still such a core part of this team. So let's talk about, you know, your thoughts on how this roster has changed specifically since they won their second consecutive title last October against Seattle Reign. I would say Kansas City has probably seen the most movement for a team that was so successful, where obviously the team's lower down. Yeah, they have to see a lot of movement. They have to make a lot of changes. This wasn't a team that had to make a lot of changes until a lot of shit went down. And we can say shit.
Yes. Well, so I think it's fair to say, in looking at this offseason, I think a lot of FCKC supporters have sort of alternated between saying, well, in Vlatko we trust, and saying, oh boy. And a lot of the latter is because of player retirement. And the interesting thing about what's happened with FCKC is that so much of it has been retirement, or in the case of Amy Rodriguez, getting pregnant, and basically not things that people are leaving because, well, they just weren't up to snuff. But so we lost Nan Robinson, or Leanne Brown, who was our starting right back. Amy Lip, who retired. Amy Lip Talbot, who is our starting center back, retired. Jen Boskowski is only going to be playing half the season this year because she's starting physical therapy school. Lauren Holiday retired. And Amy Rodriguez is having a second child. So that's half the team.
and that's not like half your bench. That's half your
starters. No. That's a lot of our core players. And it's in that respect, it's been kind of tough. I don't think any of us are over, especially Lauren Holiday retiring. But it's sort of been interesting to see, you know, Vlatko and Hugh Williams have done a heck of a job so far. They've with most of the other roster moves in the off season, especially the draft, they've done a really good job. But it's a little scary.
Well, talk about the draft picks and your thoughts when they chose them.
Sure. So I think my reaction walking out was, given where our draft picks were in terms of no first round picks and so on, that we did really well. And one of the reasons for that was picking Katie Bowen, who is a defender, midfielder, all around player out of UNC. And the thing about Bowen is, she would have been a first round pick if everybody thought she was going to play in NWSL. But as of like 2 days before the draft, everybody thought she was going to Europe because she's from New Zealand.
Right.
And then it turns out not so much. So we got her late in the second round, which is a steal. And we need defenders for the reasons we've just been talking about.
Now, she will occupy an international spot, correct?
Yes. So one of the reasons everybody was surprised by Katie Bowen is we had just traded our last international slot. So we ended up trading a second round pick for next year to Chicago for the slot, which sort of suggests the whole thing broke pretty quickly.
Right.
We took Bowen. We also drafted Brianne Reed, who was one of the center backs for Rutgers, which had a really, really stingy defense in a College Cup run. And then Alexa Newfield, who's an interesting pick because, so she's another North Carolina player, although she was started college at Georgia. She's someone, if she's healthy and if her knees hold up, she is a talent. So if you look at the stats, when this past season for UNC, she had a goal nearly a goal every 90 minutes. She led the team in scoring. The only trick the hiccup is she only played 50 minutes a game. And my understanding is that a lot of that was because they were worried that about her knee and her legs. So if she can get healthy, stay healthy, and play more than a few minutes a game, that, again, that could be a steal. She did go 90 minutes in the preseason match yesterday against UMKC, but that's encouraging. I mean, but that's just one we'll have to keep an eye on.
Right.
And Lord knows, under the circumstances, we could use more attacking talent. And then the fourth pick was another defender, Alex Arlett out of LSU, who it seems like they're trying out at the fullback spot.
Uh-huh.
Because that was the other thing. So we, Leanne Brown retired, and then we also traded Becca Morris, who'd been our starting left back last year, to Western New York for, I don't know how Vladko pulled it off exactly, but he managed to trade Becca Morris for both Brittany Taylor, who'd been one of the anchors of Western New York's back line, and Amanda Frisbee. Again, to bolster probably the fullback spot. So I think all things considered, defense, even though we lost three quarters of the back line, I'm not actually as worried as I might be. I mean, look, last season we turned over half the back line. So, you know, this is a thing we do. It's more the attacking spots that I'm worried about.
But one more defensing thing to talk about, a former KC player returning in Desiree Scott, the Destroyer.
Yes.
How does that make you feel?
So I think it's good. I think the interesting question will be where she fits. So at the moment, we have four players who I think can play or have played the defensive center mid role. That is to say, Jen Biskowski, who I mentioned a minute ago, Mandy Lattish, Yaya Laborbook, and Desiree Scott. And obviously, they can't all play. Now, Biskowski is going to be gone this second half of the season, so it won't be quite as much of a jam. And I think if I had to guess, that Averbush will play part of the season at center back, probably during the Olympics, because that's where she played last year during to the time that Becky Sauerbrunn was out for the World Cup. And it was interesting because she said at the NSCAA convention this year, where the draft was, she and Mandy Lattish and Bez Yanis of The Rain did a panel where she said, "I'd never played center back before."
Wow.
And yeah. And she said, Vladka said, "I think you can do it. And, you know, we're going to teach you the things you need to know and have at it." And then she played and they gave up only a goal a game during the period that she was out, that she was at center back, which is a testament both to her and to our midfield. So I think Desiree Scott will fit. If I had to guess, that she'll alternate some time with Biskowski and maybe they'll play Mandy Lattish a little higher. You know, but between the two of them last season, Biskowski and Lattish was tended to be the one who was a little more wide ranging and got forward a little more. And she really blossomed last year. I was very impressed with her growth as a player. So it'll be interesting to see if that continues. I note for the second preseason match today against Missouri, the starting pair in the center midfield was Biskowski and Lattish. You know, and obviously it's preseason, and there's definitely experimenting with finals. But you know, and I think that pair, again, you know, it's hard to say for certain, but I feel reasonably good about it. It's ahead of them that is the worry.
Yeah. Now, when I look at some of the midfield that's still there, you know, I still see, you know, names that would reassure me if I were an FC Kansas City fan in terms of Erica Timrak, you know, Yael Averbush, just not a lot of names.
Yes, there are not a lot of names. And I think there are some question marks. So, okay, Heather O'Reilly, we all know what we're going to get from her.
Right.
And that is not a question mark. Erica Timrak, I don't know. She the last couple of seasons have been a little bit frustrating. She has a huge amount of talent, but I think sometimes she struggled to make it count. And sometimes, especially when she's asked to be a little more of the sort of focal point of the offense. So I don't know. And if I had to guess, looking at the roster, she seems like the most likely person to try and be the Holiday, I wouldn't say replacement, but still play the Holiday role. And I think it remains to be seen whether she will pull that off. I like her a lot.
Yeah, I guess there's a question to you then is, you know, if you're Vlatko, are you trying to find somebody to be Holiday, or do you adjust your system to what you have, or is it a mix? You know what I'm saying?
I think, yeah. If I had to guess, more of a mix. I mean, look, Genrak is a different player than Holiday.
Right.
And they have somewhat different strengths. You know, and Vlatko has proven himself perfectly willing to adjust to some extent in the past. You know, I think the best example is when in 2014 in the playoffs, when they went to a much more defensive counterattacking style against Portland and Seattle, and it worked brilliantly. So it wouldn't surprise me, you know, and you look at that also with the LaRue signing. Now, that has proven to be a difficult area for other reasons, as I think we'll probably talk about. But that seems like, again, the picking someone for a team that's going to play on the counter. Timrak in the open field can be terrifying. Maybe not as good in tight spaces. So, you know, I could see him trying to go more in that direction. You know, I suspect that after the first, you know, 2, 3, 4 games, we'll have a much better idea, though.
Right. Well, and let's go ahead and talk about that forward line. So you've got, you know, two great forwards from the U.S. national team, allocated players, Sidney LaRue, Amy Rodriguez, both having what I call, seriously, I call this the forwards disease. Because years ago, my women's rec team, like all four of our forwards, got pregnant at the same time. So I feel for you, Kansas City. But, you know, so you're losing Amy, who you know what you have with Amy. You're losing Sid, who, you know, it was unclear how she was going to be used. It's been interesting to see that she's become this kind of journeywoman forward, you know,
yeah.
And we knew she was not happy at Western New York Flash. It seems like Kansas City is like, I hate my club. Can I go to Kansas City? I mean, you know, not that some players would ever say that, but you know, that clearly Vlatko's the man to, you know, to fix that kind of situation. But then you sign her and you lose her. So I wonder, and I know you can't answer this question, is like, that's two allocated players that won't play at all this year. You know, so how does that affect the roster? Does that mean they can only have 18 active players on the roster? Paid.
I wouldn't
players.
Think so. I mean, like, NWSL is not known for its, you know, forward planning and rationality when it comes to roster spots and injury replacements and all the rest of it.
Right.
But, I mean, to deprive Casey of two roster spots because of people who are out from the season from the get-go, it seems a little much even
for
that.
Yeah, so maybe they're considered inactive and it doesn't affect their roster. So, you know, whenever they come back is when, obviously, you have to cut someone to make space for them because they are now active.
Right.
You know.
So, but, you know, even assuming that they play this season, which I think is very doubtful.
Likely. Right. Right. Yeah, because they'll probably both be due right around, you know, playoffs.
Yeah. yeah, I mean, and it leaves us thin up top. You know, like, Shea Groom did a very good job last year. She's still a young player who's growing. She was effective, but she sometimes pushed the limits in terms of aggressiveness and physicality, which may be something to watch. But the thing is, she was the wide player who was not asked to be the main goal scorer, because that was A-Rod.
Right.
And it remains to be seen how she'll cope. It seems like that's going to be on her now, and it'll be interesting to see how she copes. And then the other two forwards on the preseason roster, Caroline Castor has played limited minutes for us. Done decently, but in distinctly limited minutes. Tiffany McCarty, as you know, has struggled some in the league, and I'm not sure what the team expects from her, to be honest.
The good thing with Tiff...
It felt like, to some extent... Sorry, go ahead.
The good thing with Tiff is that you get a great athlete, you know, and you get someone who's already really comfortable in the league. It's, you know, it's not a rookie. It's not an unknown. It's not an international player. And what I'm really hoping happens for Tiff is that being at a new club in a new system, you know, that maybe that's the kind of thing that can spark her to the next level. I mean, I've seen this before, you know, in league play where it's like just a different setting kind of maybe renews your passion, renews your energy, or just, you know, maybe a new coaching relationship can you know, change how you're used. The good thing about Tiff is she can play mid, she can play forward, so at least there's some flexibility there. But as far as I know, she's not been signed yet by Kansas City.
So she's listed, I don't know one way or the other on that. I mean, the preseason roster doesn't list her as simply an invitee.
Right. So, well, because they have her rights. They have her rights.
Right. So, I don't know. I confess that I wasn't paying close attention on that. But, yeah. So, I mean, that's the, like, even if we only play one forward, as has often been the pattern, it's thin. So,
right.
You know, A-Rod has scored a lot of goals for us. Had a bunch of assists over the past 2 years, and those are some big shoes to fill. Which I note, by the way, you brought up both A-Rod and Fit being out because of pregnancy. I think I do have to say that I think the reaction among a lot of the fan base was quite different. For the two of them?
Well, of course, A-Rod being already a Kansas City member, and having really, I mean, she never played with Seattle, you know, in 2013. So I never consider Amy having been part of the Seattle roster. So to me, Amy Rodriguez is Kansas City, you know. Sid, like I said, she's been this journey woman. I think, you know, I hate to use a cliche phrase like this, but like the bloom is off the rose for us, you know. She didn't have a great she didn't have a great 2015, and so you kind of wonder. It's like, you know, did she peak, or did she just hit a rough spot?
Right, right. And I think the other thing with A-Rod is just she's. I mean, she played her heart out for two seasons and did a hell of a job, and that counts for a lot.
Right.
You know, it's there's sort of a sense that, like, I suppose that she's not left us in the lurch, really, you know, because, look, she got us two championships. What more do you want?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, she delivered.
Yes. Whereas Sid, I mean, I think part of it is the whole thing last year with West Seattle and Western New York and Kansas City was not the best look. And then, you know, we burned resources trading for her, and then right after that, she announces that she's having a kid.
Yeah, and like 3 weeks before, I think she'd even tweeted, "No, I'm not pregnant," because I think someone was bugging her. You know, since she hadn't been playing towards the end of the victory tour.
Right.
You know, so I think that rumor was going out. It's like, no, I'm not pregnant, you know. And it's like, and it's clear by the due date that they announced, I think, was end of September. It's like, she wasn't pregnant when she said she wasn't pregnant. And, you know, she was by the time they announced it, which means that they announced it pretty early. But she was in a weird position of having to announce it, because if she's not on that CONCACAF roster for February...
Everybody's going to be wondering why.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I don't think she would have been on the CONCACAF roster anyway.
No, I don't think so either.
To be quite honest. But that was the thing. You know, she comes to the team and, you know, she's been pushing for that trade for, you know, a long time. And everybody's like, okay, you know, we've had our differences with Sid in the past, but she's, you know, she's on our team and we should support her and so on. And then, like, what, 2 weeks later, she's like, oh yeah, I'm out for the season.
It didn't go over well, and we totally understand why Kansas City fans would be unhappy.
Yes. And obviously, like, all of the difficulties and complications that are sort of surrounding the issue of women soccer players having kids.
Right.
It's a complicated, difficult area, and, you know, you sort of hesitate to make any judgments a lot of the time. You know, I don't know what her circumstances were, and the way it happened just didn't feel very good.
Right. And we've had other situations like this in NWSL, just, I mean, not this exact situation, but with the movement of allocated players, you know, where it's like, oh, okay, are we just being nice to that player for some reason, or, you know, what's happening behind the scenes, you know, it's like, yeah. I mean, I remember the first season with the Dash, where we get allocated Kling and Engen, and, you know, of course, they can't come till Champions League is done, and they go all the way to the final, and then they get here, and then FIFA, like, loses Klingenberg's ITC paperwork or something like that.
Right.
She can't play for another month. It's like, and it's the kind of thing that...
Look, just because her team went bankrupt.
Yeah. Even though you know there's a legitimate reason why she couldn't play, I think it brought up a similar feeling to what you're talking about, where it's like, we're being gypped. This is bull. You know, I thought this was a great player. Probably not. You know, just that kind of... And so I think this all comes back to the whole interesting allocation process, which clearly the league needed to start and will probably need for a little while longer. But I hope long-term that we do get to, you know, the more traditional soccer style of your club is who pays you and then you're called up to the national team. But I know I'm jumping ahead into the future of women's soccer, but... It's
one hopes.
Yeah, I mean, the format right now, I think it's gonna cause problems like this, where, you know, so now Kansas City is saddled with this player that you know, they probably can't use for a year, and now you've got this fan issue, and, you know, I totally understand her wanting to be closer to Dom Dwyer, just like Alex Morgan wanting to be closer to Carrasco, but I also feel like it's like, that's a gift. Like, that should not be an expectation.
Yeah.
If that works out, great. I mean, people ask the first season of The Dash, they're like, oh, so are we going to get Alex Morgan because her husband plays for the Dynamo? And I was like, he's not even in the first 18 for the Dynamo. Why would she, you know, why would she even ask for that trade? You know,
right.
So anyway.
And, you know, and then you look at a player like, to digress slightly from FC Kansas City for just a second, a player like Katie Friel, who was a great attacking mid for Sky Blue for three seasons, who just retired in the off season, and it sounds like a lot of it was she actually wanted to see her husband.
Right.
He doesn't live anywhere near New Jersey.
Right.
And you're married to someone, you want to be in a relationship with them and want to see them, and, you know, if you do that once a month, it's kind of hard.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I totally feel for Lauren Holiday, who's like, hey, I've been doing this 10 years, I've now won a World Cup, you know, two Olympics and two NWSL titles. I'd kind of like to hang out with my husband.
Yes. Well, that's,
and for you.
And that's the thing with Lauren Holiday is, like, I think we're all incredibly sad that she's no longer playing. I don't think anybody is like, well, she should have kept, you know, playing or should have,
Kind of like you said about Amy, you know, it's like she won you two championships. What more do you want?
They retired her damn number.
Yeah, which is awesome. Do you think that's the first one in NWSL?
As far as I know.
Yeah.
I certainly can't think of a second offhand. Maybe Kat Whitehill? But she also had played for the Breakers, you know, for years.
Right, but I don't know if they've retired that yet. But that I'll definitely check into that. Anyway, let's kind of wrap it up. Let's talk about you know, you follow this club, obviously the last three seasons, we're going into the historic fourth season for NWSL. What have you seen overall from this club, you know, as a club, not as a team on the field, but as a club, that you like and things that you might want to see change for season four?
The thing that I like, honestly, is they've picked really good coach and front office staff. You know, I mean, I think they've signed Blacko to an extension. They know what they've got in him. And, you know, they know that he and Hugh make a very good partnership. I like that they're making, they found what seems to be a stable medium-term field situation with a grass field. You know, they're trying to play more games at the field formerly known as Sporting Park.
We just call it Sporting Park.
which I like, and I, you know, I'm glad to see that, and hopefully it will pick up some. That said, I mean, I think there is room for question about the amount of marketing and investment that the team is doing. Given the quality of the team and what you hear about Kansas City being a great soccer town, although question mark, it is surprising that attendance is not better. I noted one of the things that made the Sydney LaRue thing particularly interesting was when she was signed the day after, Hugh Williams tweeted something to the effect of season ticket sales already up by 20%.
Interesting.
Particularly because that meant that there were a lot of people who saw Sydney LaRue and decided, I got to go see that, when the existing team and people like Rodriguez and Holiday wasn't enough, which raised my eyebrows, I will say. But I think there are questions about whether the team is willing to put in enough money to take the next step. And it's not the sort of situation where, no offense, Sky Blue fans, but with Sky Blue, you wonder if the team has a future. But I do wonder whether more will be required going forward. The other thing I think that I want to see, I will say, we do have a new jersey sponsor, which hopefully means that they've gotten a better deal than they had last year. So that's good. Domino's, which is
it's a good brand.
A good brand. Hopefully the jerseys this year will actually have championship stars on them. They didn't last year, and I think we all noticed. So
it's all about stars.
I mean, we win a championship, we don't change the kit. We have a new sponsor, okay, but they don't change the kit and they don't put on a star for the champion. Like, come on. That's just poor form.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll see. But in terms of the product on the field, I mean, I think it's going to depend a lot on the front five or the front four. And I have a lot of trust in Blacko. And, you know, I've been worried about off-season sort of roster shortcomings before, and I've been wrong. So hopefully I will be wrong again.
Yeah, as preseason for any sport, you just have to take it with a grain of salt, because that's where new players are coming into the system, the coach is experimenting, people are getting back to being match fit, and of course we have the ongoing players, you know, national team players coming in and out of camp. But yeah, I'm just looking forward to, you know, just a great season, and I like the schedule, and that it should, the NWSL regular season should be impacted less by the Olympics than it was last year by the Women's World Cup. Well, Mark, thank you so much for sharing all of your detailed thoughts about FC Kansas City. I really appreciate it. And of course, I'm sure we'll have a chat next fall after Kansas City wins its third consecutive title, right?
I would not. I am not going to be so bold as to say that will happen, but I believe in my team. I will say that, and it's always a pleasure talking to you, Jeff.
All right, Jim Cooper.
Keeper, the Keeper here with Paul Jobson, head coach of Baylor University women's soccer team. And Paul, you actually have a history that goes back to the WSA. You and your wife both, who Marcy Miller Jobson, who I love what you guys have at Baylor, where it's like at one point she was head coach and you were the assistant coach, and then you were co-head coaches, and now you're head coach and she's assistant coach. But we'll get to that in a second.
Sure.
But you guys met in the WSA at the Atlanta Beat. Tell me about how you ended up at the Atlanta Beat.
Well, it's kind of a crazy story. My best friend was the equipment manager at the Atlanta Beat. We played college soccer together, and I met Eddie Rockwell, who was the GM playing in a men's league with him. And so we're playing men's league soccer, and I said, Eddie, I love what I do. I'm coaching on the side, but I would love to get involved in the organization. If you ever have any openings, I don't really care what it is. And I said, if not, no big deal. And one day he came to me and said, hey, I've got a position open. Would you be interested? I said, sure. And then later I asked him what it was, and it was a sales rep position, but in a small organization like that, you're doing everything. And it was such a great opportunity. And what a great league. I mean, Marcy and I talk about it all the time, what a great time in our life that was. But that's where we met. And we met prior to me working there. We were friends, and her and Lisa Kraskowski at the time, we all became really good friends and hung out quite a bit. So that's how it all started.
And so now you guys have been at Baylor since 2008.
Yeah.
And so you've taken this program, you've done a lot with this program, and now you've had in the last couple of years two players, you know, sign pro contracts, Bri Campos and Carly Davis.
Yep.
You know, and we've seen some of your players like Bri get some time with the Mexico national team. So talk about the changes that you've seen, you know, since you guys have been at Baylor in women's soccer in general.
Well, a lot's changes in the school in general. Of course, you know, Randy started the program at Baylor and did such a great job. And then when he left, things started to kind of dwindle down a little bit for whatever reason. I have no idea. But we knew that there was a possibility that could be a great program again and try to replicate what Randy had done in the early years. You know, there was great success in women's basketball. Men's basketball was on the rise. The baseball and softball teams had done great. Tennis national championships. Track and field gold medalists. Football and soccer weren't there yet. But since then, I think we kind of had the same mentality of football, that we knew it was a diamond in the rough. And just through changing the mentality was number one, but keeping the core values of the university first and foremost. And that was attractive to Marcy and myself for sure. And just the recruiting base here in the state of Texas. I mean, there's so many great clubs in Dallas and Houston and Austin. You don't have to go far to find great talent. But then having now the just kind of the global market of Baylor itself, we can get outside of Texas and get great talent as well. So we just started with a mentality and started bringing in better and better soccer players to where now I think we're able to compete with the best. And you are starting to see players like Bree and Carly get pro opportunities, or some other girls that floated around some reserve teams a little bit that didn't make it. And then I've got some girls that are so career driven.
Hannah Gilmore
floated around a little bit, and Lisa Slowinski floated around a little bit too with some teams. So you know, there's some opportunities. I think we've got some kids right now in this core group that you're going to see in a league somewhere at some point. Even Jackie Crowther, is with the Youth Mexican National Team now. She heads off with the U-20s here in a week or so, or actually on Tuesday. And then we've got some other kids kind of in the mix too. So it's an exciting time.
Well, talk about how you and Marcy work together as a team, because I mean, like I mentioned before, that so she was head coach and you were volunteer assistant, and then for a couple of years you guys were co-head coach, and now it's swapped.
Yeah, the way it started when we first went to Northern Illinois University, she was the head coach, I was the assistant, became associate head coach. We kind of brought that into Baylor, and then went to co-head coaches. And really, to be quite honest, from the inside out, there's not been a lot of changes. We made the changes over the years based on our family. We went from having zero kids to three young boys under the age of six. So the family dynamics changed. But in fact, you know, family's always been number one for us. And so we made the changes based on that. All it really did is it pulled Marcy off the road from recruiting. We were able to hire another staff member so we could be just more boots on the ground out recruiting. And it gives Marcy the opportunity to spend more time with our young children, because we're not going to get this time back for our kids. So that's number one for us. And we're just blessed that Baylor's been on board with that, you know. So it's been an exciting time for us. But I think that we're a great team just because we balance each other really well. Our strengths are totally different. Our weaknesses are totally different. And we've been able to manage that over the last, 11 years now coaching together. It's been fantastic.
And I think it's a really interesting thing that you only see.
Sorry, Carly Lloyd's over here crowding space.
I think it's a really interesting thing that you only see in women's soccer, where you'd actually see a husband and wife couple coaching, like Tiffany Roberts and Troy Sahadek. Yes. I don't know how to say that last name either. Yeah. Let's talk about the game today.
Yeah.
Having the opportunity for your Baylor girls to play against an NWSL team, and I would have to argue probably one of the strongest teams that Randy Waldrum's been able to put together.
Yeah, I think Randy did a great job. You know, I was watching you guys do the draft this year. It was really cool. Just the excitement around the league now, just how it's growing, is so awesome. But yeah, I think he's put together a great team, and I think just the depth he has, he's going to have this year with the Olympics coming up and losing players throughout the season. I can't imagine managing that, but he's put together a great team, and we were just really excited to have the opportunity. What a great opportunity for our girls to see the game at the next level. You know, we got so many girls now that want to play at the next level. What does that look like? And to have the opportunity to step on the field with some of these pro players, it gives them a really good idea and a good sense of, okay, I've got to get better in these areas. And really exposed a lot of our weaknesses, but we also saw their times where we could play really well against this. So it kind of showed what we could do. So I was really happy with what we were able to do, and just really, you know, thankful for Randy and Brian allowing us to come down and play here.
How much do you follow NWSL? Do you guys get a chance to watch?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great, really kind of a great time of year for us, you know, to follow a lot of it at least. So we get to follow it quite a bit, especially having a team pretty close by here in Houston.
Yeah.
Nice to have what I'd consider to be a home team.
So you got to see the beginning of women's pro soccer in the U.S.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you guys paid some attention to WPS, but by that time Marcy had retired.
Yeah.
You know, now NWSL. So, you know, when you and I have talked about this before, that it's like, you look back at the WSA, and it's so easy for people to say, oh, they burned through $100 million. But I kind of look back at that as there were a lot of lessons learned,
right,
you know, and that they were really trying to make it a full-blown, serious league. And I think one of the struggles that NWSL has had is not being perceived as a serious league because things are so tight. But somewhere there's a balance. But so when you look at the path of women's pro soccer in the U.S., I mean, what do you look back and see? Is like, this was good, or this could have been different?
Well, like I said a little bit ago, I think that, you know, somebody had to take a chance. And
yeah,
I think that first group, that they were the pioneers of women's soccer in the U.S. from the get-go, and just took a chance on a league and found some ownership groups that were willing to take a chance. So however that ended up, good or bad, you have to look back at the beginning and say, at least somebody took a chance. I believe this league probably wouldn't be here where it is if it weren't for that league.
Right.
I
don't think U.S. soccer would have said, yeah, we need to do this.
Yeah, I don't think so. And I think that, you know, so for somebody to take a chance, and it's very rare that things are a success the first time they try them. So, you know, just I think we're very fortunate and blessed that somebody actually took a chance on U.S. soccer then, so that we could have what we have now. And I don't think we're that far away from building this the right way, to where I think this will be a league that's taken very seriously. I think soccer as a whole, we're fighting that battle on the men's side too. It's the sport itself in this country that's kind of fighting that, you know, with baseball and, you know, football. But I do think that women's soccer has a great chance, just because of the number of young women that are playing soccer, just the great opportunities that are being presented. And I can even see just the opportunities for my college players, knowing they might have an opportunity to play in the States, you know, to state pro here. And it's also open doors overseas. You know, I mean, it just gets them thinking about it even more now. So I'm excited about where the league is. I'm really excited about where the league's going. You know, people like Randy being in the league is big time.
Right.
It's big time. And guys like Brian Ching, you know, buying into this league. And I just couldn't be more excited about kind of where things are and where things are going with this league. And I'm excited to continue to watch it.
Well, we have to mention the other great WOSA Pro connection for Baylor is Chet Codd's wife, which
is a funny way
to introduce her, but Charmaine Hooper,
yep,
who was like my all-time favorite player in WSA.
Yeah. Chuck will be excited that it's Chuck Codd's wife. He doesn't get that.
Yeah, he's probably used to Charmaine Hooper's husband.
Right. We both are used to that. So
yeah, so Chuck's one of your assistant coaches.
Yes.
So Charmaine probably is not really on the coaching staff at all. But it's like, I just love that those connections are there. And you know, who would have thought that in Waco, Texas, you've got, you know, like the legendary Canadian player who, when she retired, was the caps leader and the goals leader for Canada.
Well, it's a great thing for our players, too. While Charmaine is not on our staff, obviously she's part of our family.
Right.
You know, and just to have her around is, you know, she still looks like she can play 90 minutes. I mean, you know, she hasn't changed a bit, and neither has her mentality. So.
Well, I remember Tom Stone telling me that when he picked her in the draft for WSA, people were like, oh, she's too old. She's not going to play. And then she was, leading goal scorer.
Yeah, she could still play as far as I'm concerned. She's fantastic. But to have her around our family and, you know, their young daughter, is fantastic. I mean, to have her and Marcy on our staff, I mean, you just can't, it's something a male player will never be able to give to their female players. And to have them on our staff, a little fact you may not know, Krista Davey, who's now Krista Bobo, who was with the Washington Spirit for a while, or sorry, the Washington Freedom at the time.
Yeah.
Her husband was on our staff and also lived in Waco about 2 years ago. So that having her around is well. We had three former WUSA players in our community.
Thank you both for all you've done and for taking the time to talk.
All right, time to wrap it up with the back four. First, the Under-20 Women's World Cup draw. They held a draw last Thursday, so the schedule for the tournament in Papua New Guinea has been set. The USA Under-20 Women's team will face New Zealand, Ghana, and France in Group C. Canada will take on Japan, Spain, and Nigeria in Group B, while Mexico was drawn with Germany, South Korea, and Venezuela in Group D. So that leaves host Papua New Guinea to play Sweden, Brazil, and North Korea in Group A. For more information about that tournament, just see FIFA.com. Next, finally, the new USA jerseys have been unveiled, both the home and away designs. They are officially on sale as of this Thursday, March 24th. A few things to note, the men and women's jerseys are the same design, which means only the women's cut will have the three stars and the FIFA champions patch. Note that if you buy your jersey from my store, I can add three stars, no problem. Just email me at Jen, J-E-N, at soccerforall.com for details. Also, with the unveiling, they showed one of the three goalkeeper jerseys, so we know that one of the keeper jerseys will be white. Well, it's like whitish gray, but there should be at least two other colors that the U.S. keepers will wear on a regular basis. Hopefully we'll learn those colors in April. I will be able to make keeper jerseys in the new style, and of course we will be able to customize all USA jerseys with authentic names and numbers, but I don't yet know when we'll be getting those names and numbers in. Next, Henri signs with Portland. Nope, not Thierry Henri, Amandine Henri. It's official. Amandine Henri is coming to NWSL. The French midfielder has signed with the Portland Thorns, no surprise, but she won't join the club until after her contract with her current French club, Lyon, expires in June. And she may not join the Thorns until after the Olympics. All of that is still TBA. But this is a huge signing for the club and also for the league. And Henri will become the first French woman to play with an NWSL club. WSA had Marinette Pichon, WPS had Camille Abeli, and now NWSL has Amandine Henry, or Henri, I should say. All right, last but certainly not least, the NWSL Almanac. As I tweeted in February, I am working on an NWSL Almanac that will feature team stats for all three seasons, playoffs history, an all-time registry, 2016 rosters, and more. This downloadable color PDF almanac will be available for pre-order very soon. Those who pre-order early will enjoy a special discount, and the final version will be available for download shortly after the 2016 NWSL rosters are finalized on Monday, April 11th. I am also looking into offering a printed version. Any questions, email anytime at keeper@keepernotes.com. All right, so if you're not already subscribed to the podcast, you can subscribe at TuneIn, Stitcher, iTunes. You can always find the podcast at howlermagazine.com. Just click on podcasts. Please tell other people about this podcast. Spread the word. If you have any feedback, happy to hear it. Again, keeper@keepernotes.com. And as always, thanks to PK Ray for making this podcast possible.